Chapter 3.
Don't you ever get cold, Carter?
Janine's soft voice broke the silence as we drove through the night in our yellow Hummer.
It's the winter in the Midwest, and you're in your underwear.
Shh,
Naomi whispered, and when I glanced in the rearview mirror, I saw her sultry smirk.
Don't make him second-guess his wardrobe choices, Janine. There's nothing I enjoy more in the world than when Carter is in nothing but his skivvies. Actually, there is one thing I enjoy more, but we can't really have him walking around completely naked in public.
Walking around in my underwear is pretty risque, too, you know? Especially when it's spandex so tight you can see the outline of literally everything down there.
I wouldn't have it any other way,
the witch purred. And when I looked back in the rearview mirror again, I saw Naomi lick her dark lips. I'm gonna call Ada, I said as I nodded to Janine in the passenger seat. Can you grab my phone out of the glove box? It had taken a while for me to get into the habit, but now I made sure to leave an extra cell phone and my wallet inside the vehicle whenever I went anywhere. Every time I transformed into a werepanther and all the clothes on my body were torn away, the things in my pockets were scattered to the four winds. Sometimes it was easy to find my belongings and gather them up in the aftermath of one of our battles, but in the middle of chaos, it was also pretty likely that shit would get knocked around and lost to the wilderness. Thankfully, Cincy's Jewel now made enough money that I could easily replace my phone with the latest model without even using a drop in the bucket to my finances. And all of my business bank account information and credit cards were kept safe in a lockbox back at the lounge. Sure, I might lose my personal debit card every now and then when I transformed unpredictably, but I made sure I only kept a few $100 in my personal accounts for that exact reason. I also usually left my driver's license in the vehicle, so luckily I didn't have to take any annoying trips to the DMV. Then again, Ada probably knew a guy who could get me replacements without the hassle, but it was still one less thing to worry about. Janine popped open the compartment before she reached in, popped out one of my burner phones, and handed it over to me with Ada's contact info pulled up. Her contact picture was one of the more spicy ones that she'd sent me during a personal photo shoot, where she had nothing on but a tight black leather corset and then a skimpy thong with see-through lace on the front. Normally I wouldn't put such a racy photo right there in my phone, but I was the only one who'd ever look at this, and it sent all the right thoughts through my mind whenever I saw it. I tapped the call button and then held the phone to my ear as it rang on the other end.
Hello, love.
Ada's sexy voice cooed.
Long time, no talk. How did things go at the Historical Society?
That all went great. We got some information that might be of use against Keck in particular, so that's good. Now, what happened afterwards isn't so great.
You need the cleaner?
The succubus giggled. I need the cleaner.
I'll call him right away.
Ada continued.
We can talk about all these new developments when you get back to the lounge.
While you're at it, have Leah meet us there too. And Val. She's part of this whole thing now too. I never expected the two women I'd met the first time in Ada's club would become so integral to my life, yet here we are. Leah was a drop-dead gorgeous blonde who studied biology at the University of Cincinnati, who also happened to be a member of the frog-like species known as a polyworm. Meanwhile, her friend, Valerie, was a super smart UC student who was in charge of all of our marketing and PR. Just recently, though, Val had been tossed into the world of the paranormal when the brunette was turned into a were-turtle. It was an unfortunate series of events, but I couldn't complain too much. After all, we now had a living, nearly indestructible tank of a monster on our side.
What about Paul and Tony?
Ada questioned.
Do they need to be in on this conversation as well?
I'm sure they're both busy right now. If things have been as busy at the Jewel as they've been the last few weeks, then I bet poor Tony hasn't even had a chance to catch his breath yet. Tony was our chief of security, and he was a damn good one at that. The guy may have been an ex-convict, but he was really easy to work with and one of the hardest workers I'd ever seen. We'd only had a few incidents since Cincy's Jewel opened, mainly due to drunken guests who were either getting too aggressive or too handsy, and Tony had handled every single one of them without causing a scene. Plus, he'd installed the newest security systems into our establishment, and he monitored them like a fucking hawk. Paul, on the other hand, was a tough old geezer that manned the parking lot booth behind the club. His main job was to make sure nobody tried to get in through the back or park where the employees were supposed to park. And there was nobody I'd rather have in charge of such a task. Paul may have looked old and innocent as he sat around doing his Sudoku puzzles, but I'd seen the man in action. He was smart as a whip, and he could throw down if he needed to. Plus, he carried around a 50-caliber Desert Eagle that he had no reservations about using, which helped a lot, too.
You're in luck, Carter.
Ada chuckled through the line.
Leah and Val are already here, with Becca.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, I smirked. The place has really come a long way since Div owned it.
I just hope they all understand they only get so many drinks on the house.
The succubus sighed.
I want to show them all a good time, but we are also trying to run a business here.
I'm sure Becca understands that, since she's our accountant and all.
I hope so. I'll tell Valerie and Leia to meet you back in your office when you get back, and I'll call the cleaner right away.
Thanks, I said to the succubus. And then I told her the location of our little incident before I ended the call and handed the phone back to Janine. She's sending the cleaner right away. How much longer do you think your illusion spell has?
An hour at most.
Naomi noted.
Though Ada's cleaner seems pretty efficient.
I'll say.
Janine added.
After the first time the OLG attacked Cincy's jewel, he got the entire place looking like it was brand new in no time at all. Not a single bloodstain or a piece of brain matter or a scorch mark from their magic. Nothing.
I'm curious to see how he cleans up car wreckage. That might be a bit more tricky than a CSI-looking scene.
It's Ada's guy,
Naomi said with a snort.
He's probably taken care of way, way worse messes from her before.
We continued driving through the night until finally we passed by the neon lights of my lounge. As usual, there was a line of people waiting to get in that wound down and around the block, all while our two main bouncers checked people's IDs at the front entrance. Holy fuck, I whispered as we rounded the corner and saw the line continued. Is today something special? There's a lot of fucking people here.
Word of mouth must be spreading,
Janine said.
I've overheard Cincy's jewel mentioned by students in at least 3 of my classes, and I'm hearing rumbles that some of our Greek life organizations want to start hosting events at the place. It's very popular with UC students, at the very least.
I'd say it's pretty popular with everybody around here,
Naomi added.
This looks like half the population of the city came out tonight.
Let's not get too crazy. Over 300,000 people live around here. I doubt we have anywhere near that level of attendance yet.
Is that how many people live here?
The witch muttered.
I don't really go out enough to keep track.
When we finally got around to the back alley that led to the rear parking lot of our lounge, I saw there was another vehicle up at the booth already. It was a navy blue charger that looked like the newest model possible, and it was stuck right in front of the gate as it sat there sputtering. Meanwhile, Paul was on his feet with his arms crossed over his chest and his bushy eyebrows tilted down in a disapproving scowl. Then I heard the voice I absolutely dreaded hearing.
Come on, old man,
a nasally, cocky voice spat.
5,000 is a lot of money. Think of how many packages of denture cleaners you could buy with that.
Toby Ramos, the frat douche who was always giving me and my friends grief. He'd been permanently banned from Cincy's jewel after the last time he came in and started shit. So I figured he was trying to bribe his way in through the back door to avoid the bouncers. Too bad for him, Paul was a tougher son of a bitch than any of our other employees.
Really, kid?
Paul huffed and rolled his eyes.
You know, I had a lot more manners when I was your age.
Back in the Jurassic era?
Toby snorted, and the other people in his car laughed at his awful joke.
Come on, just let us in. It's not gonna hurt anybody.
On the contrary, kid. You're banned from this place for life, and I'm working for this place. I'm loyal to Mr. Hatfield, and I ain't gonna break his rules just because you think you can buy your way out of everything with Daddy's money.
It's my mother's money, thanks. Are you seriously not gonna let us in?
Should we intervene?
Janine whispered to me, since she couldn't hear what they were saying, but I shook my head. Nope. Not yet, at least. I have a feeling this is going to be hilarious. Even if Paul had somehow decided to take their bribe and let Toby and his douchey friends pass to the gate, they weren't going to get very far. Naomi had hexed our lounge a long time ago with a spell that kept out anybody who wished to do myself, my friends, or the building itself any harm. If Toby and his friends got anywhere close to Cincy's jewel, they would all be knocked out cold on their asses by the powerful magic that protected it.
Do you want to make it 6,000? 10. I just need to get into this club, man.
Then maybe you shouldn't have been such a little bitch the last time.
Ugh, nobody talks to me like that, geezer. And I'm about to step out of this car and...
Before the frat boy could finish his sentence, Paul casually lifted up his Desert Eagle and placed it on the desk in front of him. I couldn't see Toby's face when he saw the gun, but the way he went silent in an instant told me everything I needed to know.
You were saying something,
Paul asked with a smug grin.
You can't just threaten us, bro. We haven't done anything wrong. Put that thing away or we're calling the cops.
The way I see it, you're trespassing on private property.
Paul shrugged.
And you just threatened to physically assault an old geezer. I don't think the cops are going to be on your side on this one, Junior.
Okay.
Toby argued through a trembling voice.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to get into the club. All my other frat brothers are in there right now.
Tough. You should have thought of that before you were an asshole.
Oh, come on, man, please. I promise there won't be any problems this time.
Fuck me. I chuckled to the others. He's begging Paul to let him in.
Are there any depths that guy won't sink to?
Janine rolled her eyes.
I'll tell you what, kid,
Paul said as he did a small stretch and then pointed back to our vehicle.
It looks like the boss man just pulled up behind you, so why don't you try to talk to him and leave me the fuck alone, huh?
That's Carter's car?
Toby asked as his voice turned into a tone of full-blown panic. I saw the asshole lean out of his window and turn around, so I gave him a sly smirk and a little wave. The last time we'd seen each other, I'd kicked Toby's ass with ease and embarrassed him in front of all of his friends, and I would gladly do it again if he was going to keep being a problem. Without warning, the wheels of Toby's Charger squealed against the pavement, and the car lunged forward.
What are you doing, Toby?
One of the passengers screamed.
Yeah, fuck!
Toby blubbered as the Charger smashed into the arm of the parking booth and sent it splintering into a million pieces.
Son of a bitch!
Paul snarled as he picked up his gun and took aim.
Wait!
I called out to the security guard.
Don't fire!
Let the Hex take care of them. If Paul fired his pistol, he'd have a lot of explaining to do. Somebody inside would probably call the police, who would come and shut us down while they investigated the claim, and if Paul actually shot one of the assholes in the car, we would have a lot of explaining to do. Instead, I was just going to sit back and watch while Toby took care of himself.
What is he doing?
Janine asked.
Does he really think he can just ram his way into the lounge?
He doesn't give a shit about the lounge anymore. He just wants to get away from me. The Charger continued down the alleyway until it finally came out into the employee parking lot of Cincy's Jewel. I was sure Toby had every intention of whipping his car around and hightailing it back out onto the road as fast as he could, but the poor bastard never got there. There was a major flash of silver light right in front of the car, followed by a loud metallic crash that echoed through the alley. The Charger's momentum was stopped in an instant as it hit Naomi's Hex, and I heard the hiss of the deploying airbags as the car went up on its crumpled nose for a second and then slammed back down onto the pavement.
Oh, shit!
Naomi gasped.
I didn't think the Hex would be strong enough to hold off an entire car.
Are they okay?
Janine gulped.
Toby might be an asshole, but I don't think he deserves to die.
I can still hear four separate heartbeats, I said as my superhuman hearing listened for any signs of life.
They'll be fine.
So, what do you want me to do about Tweedle's dumbass and his merry men?
Paul asked as we pulled up to the window of the booth.
Leave them to walk off their concussions?
Call a tow truck. Say they've had a bit too much to drink and had an accident. That'll at least get them out of our hair.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, you want me to plant anything on them while I'm at it? I'm sure our bouncers have picked up all sorts of illegal shit from our patrons.
What? No, you don't have to do that. Just see if you can get them out of here as soon as possible. Paul gave me a smirk and a salute before I drove on down the alleyway. As we passed by Toby and his friends in his Charger, I saw the red-bearded bastard behind the wheel of his vehicle, with his eyes closed and a friction burn on his forehead from where the airbag had exploded into his face. There were three more guys in the car as well, and all three of them were in equal states of disorientation as they groaned and slowly moved their heads. The front end of the Charger had been smashed into oblivion as it smoked, and liquid dripped out from underneath its undercarriage, but otherwise the body of the car looked fine. It would probably cost a few $1,000s to fix, but Toby would get his little sports car back eventually.
And maybe, just maybe, the fucker will have learned to stay away for good this time.
We pulled our Hummer into one of the empty parking spaces beside the rest of the yellow vehicles in the lot. And then I killed the engine, gathered up my things, and hopped out. There were a bunch more identical yellow Hummers in the lot, all of which used to serve as the security detail for Div, the demon and former owner of Cincy's Jewel. Maybe it was because I had seen so many sports cars today, or maybe it was simply because looking at the fleet of identical vehicles reminded me of just how little taste Div had, but I suddenly felt the urge to upgrade. Sure, the Hummers were great when we were running from bad guys or if we wanted to get anywhere around town, but there would eventually come a day when I'd need to expand beyond Cincinnati. And I sure as fuck wasn't driving cross-country in this gas guzzler. I could afford it, for sure, but it would make for a very annoying trip if I had to stop every 100 miles and refill. That's when I decided then and there it was time to finally spend some of my hard-earned money. And I was going to spend it on something I'd love, and that I was sure my women would love even more.
Yeah,
I heard Paul on the phone from afar as we approached the back door of the lounge.
If you could send a truck over ASAP, that'd be great.
I punched in the security code beside the door, which lit up green as it unlocked. I held the door open for Naomi and Janine as they walked inside, and then I slid in behind them. Off in the distance, I could hear the chatter of our lounge's many patrons, as well as the music from the live musician that we'd hired for the night. Servers, bartenders, and hospitality staff rushed around in the hallways around us, though each one seemed to stop and say hi when they saw me pass. They also didn't seem to blink at my state of undress, but then again, that was pretty commonplace around here, at least for me. Eventually, we arrived at my office. So I pulled open the door to reveal Ada, Val, and Leah all standing around my large mahogany desk. Well, Val and Leah stood around the desk. Ada, on the other hand, sat in my winged lounge chair, with her stiletto heels crossed over each other on top of the dark wood of the desk. The succubus's green eyes lit up when she saw us enter the room, and she twirled a lock of her dark hair with her finger as she smiled sensually.
It took you long enough, love.
Ada chuckled as she lowered her legs and leaned forward.
I was starting to think you weren't going to show up.
Sorry, we ran into Toby Ramos in the parking lot.
The back parking lot?
Leah gasped as her blue eyes widened.
What was that asshole doing back there?
Trying to bribe Paul to let him in?
Naomi snickered.
When the old man wouldn't, he tried to come in anyways and he completely totaled his car.
Oh.
Leah said with a half smile.
I would have liked to see that.
It was glorious.
Janine added as she pushed her glasses up her nose.
And it was all because he was scared shitless of Carter.
I would be too,
Naomi said.
After the beatdown Carter gave him last time, I'm shocked he'd ever show his face around here again.
He doesn't want to be left out.
Leah scoffed as she crossed her arms over her chest.
If everybody else is coming to Cincy's Jewel, then he's going to make sure he gets in here too. That's just how he is.
Well, he could keep trying, I shrugged. Between Paul, Tony, and Naomi's spell, he's not getting in.
Enough about this annoying human,
Ada said with a tilt of her head.
What happened after you left the Historical Society?
Ada said there was an incident.
Valerie spoke up with a stone-cold face.
Are you all right?
We're fine, I said, as I gestured down to my skivvies. I turned and took care of our attackers.
Who were they?
Leah's face twisted with concern.
More OLG members?
No, it wasn't the OLG this time. It was the Ancient Order of the Nile.
The Ancient Order of the Nile?
Ada gasped, and her green eyes widened.
They're still around?
So you know who they are?
Janine asked.
I will admit, they are one of the few cults I'm not that familiar with.
I've had dealings with a few of their members in the past.
The succubus continued.
Though they are very secretive in what they do. Picture a sort of rich, snooty, country club sort of crowd. Only the country club members also worship the Egyptian god of chaos and perform bloody rituals to appease him.
Ah, sounds charming. Great. So now we've got another fucking group of cultists to worry about in addition to the OLG.
I've never heard of them making such a bold move, though.
Ada said as she stroked her chin.
Especially out in the open like that.
What do you mean?
The Ancient Order of the Nile isn't your typical group of occultists.
The succubus mumbled.
They don't walk around in robes and carry people out into the forest or to an old factory to kill them. And they certainly don't normally attack their enemies directly. From what I understand, the entire society is made up of the super rich, and most of their meetings consist of sitting around with a glass of whiskey or wine and talking about the finer things in life. The contact I had 100 years ago told me they only ever performed rituals in the comfort of their own mansions, since most of them were prominent members of society.
Well, they attacked us, I repeated with a shrug. And the only one that was left alive told me he was working for the Ancient Order of the Nile, right before Keck killed him anyway.
I'm not saying it's impossible,
Ada noted.
Just strange, that's all.
I feel like strange is pretty par for the course,
Valerie interjected with a slight scoff.
My life has been nothing but strange these last few weeks, ever since that damn god gave me his blood.
I could definitely empathize with Valerie, Though I had a lot more control over my Werepanther side in the beginning, it was still a major shock to realize there was this infinitely powerful creature living deep inside of me, which was a creature that could come out with the slightest bit of anger or primal instinct. Before I'd gained my ability to transform at will, all it took was seeing one of my friends in danger or staring down a deadly enemy to send me over the edge and turn. Valerie was still learning to control her were-turtle half, but she hadn't transformed since that night back in the abandoned subway tunnels, when we'd fought Newt and a bunch of his minions. Even then, it was probably weird for such a no-nonsense, headstrong woman like herself to be thrown into the world of the paranormal as abruptly as she had been.
That still means we have a bunch of rich assholes trying to kill us.
Leah frowned.
Though our numbers may be growing as well,
Janine declared with a smile.
We discovered a potential ally through our research, the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus.
There's a chapter of the Brotherhood here in Cincy?
Ada raised an eyebrow. I'm guessing they like to keep under the radar, too. If there was a cult in this area, I would have assumed you'd dealt with them at some point.
They appear to be fairly secretive as well,
Janine said.
Any references I've encountered about them are primary sources that were not meant for the public eye. From what I can tell, they don't even keep records of their meetings, nor do they have any lists of their members.
What do you know about them?
They're a fairly tight-knit group,
the redhead continued.
Members of the Brotherhood are just that, brothers. They actually care about each other, to the point where they have to live together in a commune for the first 5 years of their membership to prove their loyalty to the cause.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
It is intense. I don't know much more about them other than a few characteristics that they all seem to share. Like what?
Leah asked.
Well, for one, they all have a tattoo of a blue lotus somewhere on their bodies,
Janine explained, and both Leah and Valerie shared a strange look.
And unlike the Ancient Order of the Nile, they're a little more traditional. They wear very elaborate cloaks made of white fabric and embroidered with golden trim and lots of jewels, all of which are made to look like the sort of thing pharaohs wore in the ancient days.
Suddenly, I heard two heartbeats in the room begin to quicken, and as I furrowed my brow and tried to home in on the sounds, I realized Valerie and Leah were the two whose hearts had gone into overdrive.
So, they look like Cleopatra and have tattoos,
Naomi said with a roll of her eyes.
That shouldn't be hard to find.
Much like the god they worship,
Janine explained.
Members of the Brotherhood also seem to have an obsession with the lotus flower, to the point where some of them even have one of the plants grafted into their hair.
Now, Valerie and Leah's heartbeat seemed to stop, and when I looked at the two women, the color was completely gone from their faces. Leah? Val, are you okay?
We're fine,
Leah gulped.
But I think I'm having a realization right now,
Ada questioned.
Becca's father,
Val mumbled as her expression darkened.
You're describing Becca's father to a T.
Holy shit. Finding the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus may have just gotten a million times easier.